Welcome to the Shortwave Report for December 23rd, 2011. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past four shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from China Radio International, Radio Deutsche Welle, Spanish National Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, and The Voice of Russia. We'll begin with China Radio International. The Chinese president expressed his condolences on the death of North Korean leader Kim Jong-il. Material from the Japanese earthquake, which caused the Fukushima nuclear disaster, has begun washing up along the west coast of North America from California to British Columbia. China Radio International.
Chinese President Hu Jintao has paid a visit to the North Korean embassy in Beijing to express his condolences following the death of Kim Jong-il. At the same time, Chinese Foreign Minister Yang Jiechi has held phone conversations with his US and South Korean counterparts to talk about the death of North Korea's top leader. Yang says that safeguarding peace and stability on the Korean peninsula will serve the common interests of all parties. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Liu Weimin.
Foreign Minister Yang Jiechi said that maintaining peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula is in the interests of all sides. China is willing to work hard with all sides to this effect.
Meanwhile, in the North Korean capital of Pyongyang, people continue to mourn, laying flowers at the base of a bronze statue of Kim Jong-il's late father, Kim Il-sung. The South Korean government has also offered its condolences to North Korea, saying that the South hopes the North will restore stability soon.
Talfino is a small beach town on Canada's Vancouver Island. Local residents say they have found cans of Japanese air freshener and water bottles over the past week.
Yeah, just sort of more so than usual. We're finding bottles and different items from Japan.
Surf shop owner John Froman says he's also found about 50 large pieces of wood on the beach. He says each is stamped with the letters JP, which I believe stand for Japan's country code.
Who knows, it could be coming off boats, could be, again, from the earthquake in Japan. Either way, you know, whatever it is, whether it is related to this earthquake or not, it's an eye-opener as to what's coming for sure.
Debris is also thought to have been washed up further south on the U.S. coast. Local newspapers even say tons of debris from Japan will likely begin washing ashore from California to southern Alaska in about a year. Oceanographers say items that wash up may include portions of houses, boats, ships, furniture, car parts, and even human bodies. The mayor of Tofino Parish Monk says he hopes any items that wash ashore are treated with respect.
Definitely everything that's involved that is coming ashore is dealt with quite a significant human tragedy.
Back in Japan, dealing with the wreckage left behind by the disaster is likely to take many more years. For CRI, I'm Su Yi.
Those reports were from China Radio International, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 11970 and from 6 p.m. to 11 at either 9790, 6020, or 6190, or on the web at english.cri.cn. All the times I'm announcing are for Pacific Standard Time, so adjust them to your time zone. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Reporters Without Borders has released the annual figures for journalists killed and arrested around the world. The United States failed to block plans for a carbon tax imposed on air flights across the European Union. British Prime Minister Cameron's decision to veto an EU treaty change has been called the Great Divorce, an analysis of the growing UK isolation from the continent. Russia has demanded an investigation of civilian deaths by NATO in the course of the Libyan regime change. Radio Deutsche Welle.
66 journalists were killed worldwide this year and more than 1,000 were arrested, according to Reporters Without Borders in a report issued on Thursday. The press freedom group named cities in Syria, Egypt and Libya as the world's most dangerous places for the media. 10 journalists were killed in Pakistan this year, making it the most dangerous country for reporters in a second year in a row. With violent crackdowns on pro-democracy demonstrations across the Arab world, the number of journalists killed in the Middle East doubled to 20 this year. A similar number were killed in Latin America, where reporters are exposed to the threat of organized crime. The US has rejected a European court ruling saying EU plans for a tax on carbon emissions must be dealt with by the International Aviation Body. It had tried to block the plans, but the European Court of Justice ruled on Wednesday that they were legal. Airlines will be charged for carbon emissions created by flights to and from 27 EU countries from next year. The US Airlines Association said they were considering further legal action, but would in the meantime comply with the directive, although, as they put it, under protest.
One other massive piece of fallout from this year's seemingly never-ending Eurozone crisis has been described as the Great Divorce, Britain's decision last week to effectively veto an EU treaty change that the rest of the bloc believed is needed to help beat Europe's financial crisis. UK Prime Minister David Cameron opposed the plans to change the Lisbon Treaty, claiming it would lead to a, quote, treaty within a treaty. He went on to warn that the proposals would benefit Eurozone members, those that have the euro as their currency, at the expense of countries like Britain who don't. But the decision means that the UK is, once again, isolated from the rest of the continent, and now faces an uncertain future as part of the EU. Nick Martin with more from London.
I went to Brussels with one objective, to protect Britain's national interest.
As the EU now prepares a separate new treaty to help bring about closer integration, Britain's Prime Minister David Cameron has had to explain to his Parliament why the UK is once again on the outside looking in.
France and Germany said in their letter last week that the Eurozone should work on single market issues like financial regulation and competitiveness. That is why we required safeguards, and I make no apology for it.
Safeguards in the proposals to protect the City of London, a main driver of the UK economy, from having its wings clipped. Cameron feared London's dominance as one of the world's top financial centres was under threat.
Of course, I wish those safeguards had been accepted, but frankly, I have to tell the House, the choice was a treaty without proper safeguards or no treaty, and the right answer was no treaty. It was not an easy thing to do, but it was the right thing to do.
Despite opposition claims that the move has left Britain isolated, many think the veto was just business as usual for UK-EU relations, which have been strained, let's face it, since the bloc's inception. Dr. Nick Anstead is from the London School of Economics and Political Science.
I think you can certainly see this event as being part of a continued pattern of Britain's attitude to Europe. In other words, an inability to articulate a vision of what an increasingly united, increasingly integrated Europe will look like. That's partially because we reject that idea, or we tend to feel quite uncomfortable with it, but it's also partially because we tend to think in tactical terms in our European negotiations.
Anstead says British negotiators think in terms of rebates and opt-outs rather than institutions. Officials, he says, often make the mistake of thinking of Europe as one bloc. And that same theory of them and us also goes for the British public, who are by and large anti the EU. Approval for Cameron's decision to opt out is already showing up in opinion polls conducted since last week's summit. Figures show a gain for the Prime Minister's centre-right Conservative Party. But Cameron's veto has not only isolated him from his European partners, it's also threatened a rift in Britain's coalition government. The Deputy Prime Minister and leader of Cameron's junior coalition partner, the Liberal Democrats, stayed away from the parliamentary debate this week. Nick Clegg says there was a real danger the UK could be marginalised. Opposition leaders have played up the threat to the UK economy. After all, more than half of Britain's trade is with other EU countries. Labour leader Ed Miliband told a parliamentary debate that Cameron had left Britain detached from the rest of Europe.
He has given up our seat at the table. He has exposed, not protected, British business. And he has come back with a bad deal for Britain. Many people feared an outcome of 17 countries going it alone. Few could have anticipated the diplomatic disaster of 26 going ahead and one country, Britain, being left behind.
Before last week's summit, Eurosceptics in Cameron's party were calling for a display of the British bulldog spirit during the Prime Minister's negotiations in Brussels. Many saw the veto as a chance to transfer more powers back to London. Political scientist Nick Anstead said David Cameron had promised the British people a referendum on any new EU treaties and wonders how that influenced his decision.
If Britain had signed a renegotiated treaty, then there would have been a whole question about whether he would have had to honour this pledge, and certainly a lot of his backbenchers have already been talking in previous weeks that essentially not to offer a referendum would have been a breach of trust. And again, the sort of ghosts of previous Conservative Prime Ministers who were damaged or even removed because of their attitude to Europe would have haunted Mr. Cameron.
As he looks to rebuild bridges with Europe, Cameron, it seems, will have his work cut out, trying to keep the public, his supporters and his EU partners happy. Nick Martin, Deutsche Welle Radio, London.
Russia has demanded that NATO investigate civilian deaths caused by its bombing campaign in Libya earlier this year. Russia's UN ambassador, Vitaly Churkin, said he'd asked NATO to give a definitive report to the UN Security Council. He disputes the alliance's claim that there were no civilian casualties during NATO's seven-month campaign in support of Libyan rebels, which led to the demise of Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi. Russia has argued that NATO used the limited UN resolution authorizing the protection of civilians as a pretext for regime change. Human rights groups claimed last week that over 50 civilians were killed by the airstrikes.
Those reports are from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard as a combined audio-video website, mediacenter.dw-world.de. On to Spanish National Radio. Brazil is suing Chevron for a large offshore oil spill, and several firms, including BP, have purchased new drilling leases in the Gulf of Mexico. A Spanish journalist just published a book about WikiLeaks, reviving unresolved issues about the freedom of speech and information. Spanish National Radio.
The Brazilian government has filed an $11 billion suit against the oil giant Chevron, as well as the drilling company Transocean, over an offshore oil spill last month. Brazil says the spill leaked at least 2,400 barrels of oil. Chevron has admitted it caused the accident by wrongly estimating the pressure and rock strength in the reservoir it was targeting. Brazilian prosecutors say they will seek a permanent ban on the company's operations.
In related news, several large oil firms have purchased new drilling leases in the Gulf of Mexico in the first such auction since the BP oil spill of April of 2010. The firm ConocoPhillips was the highest bidder, paying more than $103 million to drill. BP was also a winning bidder, paying $27 million.
Here in Europe, most of our news has been hijacked by financial considerations, with politics, national and international, taking a back seat. It is an unfortunate and dangerous situation, as if the decisions of politicians and the policies of governments were no longer of any interest to the common citizen, who has become too frightened about his or her job security or economic future to care. But just 2 weeks ago, Spanish journalist Mónica Plaza published a book entitled WikiLeaks, La Era de los Soplones, The Era of the Whistleblowers, reviving issues that are of tremendous importance to our future, and in particular, the issue of freedom of speech and freedom of information. The thousands of diplomatic cables concerning U.S. and Spanish relations that WikiLeaks gave to newspapers to publish referred primarily to three cases the Spanish judiciary was investigating: the killing of cameraman José Corso in Baghdad in 2003, the stopovers at Spanish airports of U.S. extraordinary rendition flights carrying terror suspects, and the torture of Spanish or EU citizens or residents imprisoned in Guantanamo. Monica Plaza discusses each in a chapter dedicated to Spain. The case of Spanish cameraman José Coso has been especially shaking to the public here because the young journalist was killed by U.S. troops, allies of Spain, and judicial efforts to identify and try those people responsible for his death have been thwarted. It is also a case in which WikiLeaks has played an important role thanks to its release of diplomatic cables. José Coso was killed along with a Reuters reporter by U.S. troops who fired on their hotel in Baghdad in 2003 while they were covering the invasion and war. The hotel was known to be housing the International Press Corps, and the U.S. Armed Forces offered no explanation of why they fired on it. From the beginning, José Coso's family pressed the Spanish authorities to get an explanation from the U.S. and ordered a judicial investigation into the case. But it wasn't until 2010, when the WikiLeaks exposed all of the efforts made by the Spanish government under pressure from the United States to prevent and undermine the judicial investigation, that the Coso family understood how much of a miscarriage of justice they had to fight. Another case in which the WikiLeaks cables exposed not only the U.S. pressure on Spain to halt judiciary investigations, but also and above all the Spanish government's lies concerning the rendition flights. Prime Minister Aznar, who supported George W. Bush and Tony Blair in the invasion of Iraq, also approved the use of Spanish airports for secret stopover flights by CIA planes transporting terror suspects to the base in Guantanamo, Cuba. However, he denied all knowledge of this practice, not only because extraordinary rendition is against international law and treaties, but also because European legislation prohibits this abuse of human rights. The European Council, the EU's human rights watchdog, in 2006 found that Spain was among 14 European countries that had allowed these secret stopovers for refueling. Spain's socialist government, that had promised a full investigation into the matter when it took power in 2004, soon applied pressure against its own prosecutors and judges in order to keep the truth hidden. A foreign ministry statement as late as 2008 said that Spain has not and will not allow any violation of human rights on its territory in connection with the so-called CIA flights. The cables WikiLeaks published revealed that the stopovers were allowed and that all investigation into them was torpedoed. The WikiLeaks cables reveal that the investigations led by Spanish judge Baltasar Garzón, who was responsible in the 1990s for the detention of Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet for crimes against humanity, were especially worrying to the U.S. government. The cables also revealed that Spanish prosecutors shared information on cases. A major concern to the U.S. was a torture case brought by a non-governmental organization against six senior Bush administration officials, including former Attorney General Alberto González. U.S. officials threatened their Spanish counterparts with consequences for bilateral relations should the investigations continue. But mostly, the U.S. feared Judge Garzón and his separate case on alleged torture. In each case, in each judicial investigation, whether on José Coso's death or the rendition flights or torture, Spanish officials were shown through the WikiLeaks cables to be making every possible effort to follow the U.S. directives and obstruct justice here in Spain.
Those reports were from Spanish National Radio, now heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 5970 and podcasting at rtve.es/radio. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. Venezuelan President Chavez criticized President Obama, who had stated Venezuela threatens democratic values and puts the region at risk by having alliances with Cuba and Iran. Venezuela is likely to become a full member of the political and economic alliance called Mercosur, the common market of the South. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez criticized the recent declarations of U.S. President Barack Obama, who asserted that Venezuela threatens democratic values. Obama said that Chavez's government has restricted the rights of the Venezuelan people and has put the region's security at risk by maintaining relations with Iran and Cuba. In response to these comments, President Chavez accused Obama of attacking Venezuela with the objective of winning more votes in his re-election. Chavez also said that his country will never again be a colony and he recommended that Obama seek votes in his own country and not interfere with Venezuela. Chavez continued his response by saying that Obama, the first black president of the United States, misled his supporters with false promises during his campaign.
The 42nd Summit of the Common Market of the South, Mercosur, has developed a dynamic agenda that includes the facilitation of the incorporation of Venezuela in the sub-regional bloc. The Argentinian Foreign Minister Hector Timmerman spoke about the solidarity and generosity of Caracas with the countries of Mercosur, the Union of South American Nations, and the region in general. The bloc was founded 20 years ago by Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, and Paraguay. The parliaments of the first three founding countries have expressed their support of the incorporation of Venezuela into Mercosur, while Paraguay has not. The social organizations of the entity called on the officials to accelerate the entry of Venezuela to the bloc as well. Other topics on the agenda are how to access markets, inter-bloc commerce, and common external tariffs. Luis, Uruguayan Foreign Minister, emphasized institutional agreements such as the creation of the responsibilities of the High General Representative and the need of coordinating and political impulse for more frequent meetings among the presidents. The official added that they will also discuss the incorporation of Ecuador to Mercosur.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba, heard from 2 to 3 p.m. at 11760 and from 4 to 11 p.m. at either 6060, 6010, or 6000. Also streaming on the web from 4 to 11 p.m. at www.radiohc.cu. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or would like to make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490. I am really grateful for any donations to help support this program. We will conclude with the voice of Russia. Many Latin American leaders met in Mexico and condemned the United States for contributing to the violent drug crime in their countries. They issued a joint declaration against U.S. drug policy and urged legalization of drugs if the U.S. cannot restrict the demand from its citizens. The Voice of Russia.
Leaders of a number of Latin American countries at a regional summit in Mexico jointly condemned the United States for its contribution to violent drug crime in their countries. The Washington Post on Tuesday reported that Mexican President Felipe Calderón, President Juan Manuel Santos of Colombia, President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, and President Daniel Ortega of Nicaragua and others issued a joint declaration against the U.S. drug policy.
South American leaders also urged the U.S. to legalize drugs if they are unable to restrict the demand of American consumers. President Felipe Calderón said, "We are living in the same building, and our neighbor is the largest consumer of drugs in the world, and everyone wants to sell him drugs through our door and our window."
Guatemalan President Alvaro Colom argued in his statement, "Our region is seriously threatened by organized crime, but very little responsibility is being taken by the drug-consuming country." He blamed American drug addicts and recreational drug users for undermining the South American continent. Colom added, "The hemisphere is paying the price for drug consumption in the United States with our blood, our fear, and our human sacrifice."
Drug transit countries such as Mexico have some of the highest homicide rates worldwide, while at the same time, international drug cartels are growing richer and more powerful from smuggling drugs and weapons across borders. During the summit, officials representing 11 Latin American countries declared that the authorities in consumer countries should explore all possible alternatives to eliminate exorbitant profits of criminals, including regulatory or market options, which is diplomatic slang for legalization.
This might not be the first time that South American leaders have expressed their outrage at what they perceive to be a largely a North American problem. But never before have so many been so vocal and so unanimous in their condemnation of U.S. drug policies and the toll that it has had on their countries. The Mexican government has estimated that over 35,000 of its citizens have been killed in drug-related gun violence from 2007 to 2011, while Mexican drug cartels earn some $13 billion a year smuggling drugs such as cocaine and marijuana into the U.S.
Latin American leaders argue that while the U.S. has spent $1 trillion on its 40-year-long drug war, it has produced little tangible benefits. Obama administration officials have said in response that the frustration is understandable, given that transit countries are left with the task of combating drug war violence, but claim that the rhetorical attacks are counterproductive.
William Brownsfield, Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of International Narcotics, said of the war on drugs, "I refuse to accept that there has not been progress in the fight against drug trafficking and consumption. In fact, the use of cocaine in the United States has declined by 21% since 2007. Meanwhile, however, the use of methamphetamine, heroin, and marijuana is on the rise." Brownsfield also argued that it was wrong to place the blame for drug trafficking solely on U.S. consumption, saying, "No one single issue drives this global drug problem. Everybody plays his role. Everybody shares responsibility."
Andrew Seeley, director of the Woodrow Wilson Center's Mexico Institute, told The Post that the biggest threat to Latin America comes from organized crime funded by drug money. He added, "The cruel irony is that drug violence is down in the United States, and so it is hard to build a political constituency that wants to do much more to help Latin America."
The U.S. might have provided Mexico with almost $700 million in aid, including sophisticated intelligence and military technology. However, Mexico's president, Felipe Calderón, said that this help will not suffice unless the U.S. curbs drug consumption at home. Nicaragua President Daniel Ortega reiterated Calderón's argument by saying, "All of the money, regardless how much it is multiplied, and all of the blood, no matter how much is spilled, will not stop the drug trade as long as the North continues consuming."
Another issue highlighted by Latin American leaders is a contradictory U.S. drug policy regarding medical marijuana. The group argued that while medical marijuana can be purchased legally, South American producers of the substance are hunted down by the military. Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos said in this regard, "If all you're doing is sending our citizens to prison while in other places the market is legalized, then we must ask, is it not the time to review the global strategy against drugs?"
As part of the solution, President Ortega suggested that the group monitor and rate anti-drug efforts by the United States, just as the U.S. State Department does for the region, while Costa Rican President Laura Chinchilla proposed that the United States reimburse the transit countries. El Salvador President Mauricio Funes added that the U.S., being the world's largest market and biggest consumer of drug substances, has a moral responsibility to do more.
That report was from the Voice of Russia. Russia is now heard from 6 p.m. to 10 at 12030-13665, 9840, and 7250, or through their website, www.english.ruvr.ru. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Standard Time. Please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people to listen to international broadcast using a shortwave radio at home, which is pretty simple. However, if you use the internet, listening globally is also quite easy, maybe easier. See the links at this program's website. Every Friday morning, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters, make a safe donation through PayPal, and get advice for listening at home. The shortwave report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. The shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.